Everybody, my name is the Reverend Brian Blair, and you are on the show Crossroads, the weekly show here on WHUS 91.7 Stores, where we ask our guests the same question every time. Where is the intersection between your faith life and your everyday life? And I am here with our wonderful guest this week, Nathan Oldham. Hi, Nate. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here.
Good. Good to see you. In a second, we're going to get to you, but first, a few announcements. And also, Nate, if you have anything that's on the horizon that you'd like to announce, either about projects you're working on personally, or we always allow our guests if they have something they're working on for like a not-for-profit or something good in the neighborhood. So if you have anything, you're up next. But first of all, everybody, no call-ins. If you want to get in touch with me, get in touch with me on Twitter at Rev Blair, R-E-V-B-L-A-Y-E-R. And there's some stuff coming up in one of the best churches in the universe right here on campus, St. Mark's Episcopal Chapel. Wednesday, come on by. We're going to listen to a TED Talk by a rabbi about the relevance of religion in society today. There's free food. You get to chat, meet some friends and folks, and have a good time. Friday, we have the next installment of our organ concert series. So check that out on our website and come on down and listen to some fantastic music, and then stick around for our wine and cheese reception following. And if you're a student here at UConn and you'd like to get off campus for a day completely free of charge, we are going apple picking with Yale University. Maybe not the whole entire school, but a bunch of people. So if you'd like to meet some people who are not UConn, if you'd like to get off campus, and if you just love apple picking, come on by Saturday. You have to let us know at the office at St. Mark's so we can expect you and make sure we have enough room in the cars to bring you along. Nate, good to see you.
What's up, man?
Are you doing anything you'd like to make an announcement about?
Sure. I mean, that's not why I strictly came on here. But yeah, I've got a, and we'll talk about this probably a little bit more, but there's a new project I'm working on for photography. It's called I Am Your Neighbor. And it's going to be hosted on Instagram. So everything's going to be pushed through there. It's going to be imagery and it's going to be text that accompanies it. The handle is at neighbormvmt. And I'm not going to say too much more about it right now because I feel like we're probably going to dig into it a little bit further into the podcast. So that's the main thing. Yeah.
All right. Wonderful. Everybody, we're here with Nathan Oldham, our guest this week. And Nate, why don't we get into it? What do you do here both at UConn and what do you do with your life outside of UConn professionally?
Sure. So professionally, I am a photographer. Technically, it's a media producer, which basically is a fancy way of saying anything that requires a camera to produce digital visuals. I am the guy. So I do that at UConn at the School of Business. And I've been doing that for a much longer time on my own outside of the UConn School of Business. So video, photo, motion graphics, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Very good. So here on campus, do you have a title? Do you have a department you specifically work for?
Yeah. So the digital media producer for the UConn School of Business.
That's, what do they get you to do as the digital producer, media producer?
Do a lot of interviews. We try to find people in the business community who are shaking things up or who have been considered successful. We track them down. We interview them, sometimes on camera. Sometimes it's just a picture. So that's pretty much it.
So let's say you find somebody in the business community. Are you supposed to bring that back to the students to help enhance their classroom experience, or are you interviewing them because they work with UConn in some specific way?
Yeah, it's all of the above. It's really meant to show, I think, depending on what the angle is and what the story is, people are always interested in coming in and saying, all right, if I'm going to pursue a career in business, where am I going to go? And so we look at all these people who are involved in small and large companies all over the globe, and people can maybe see themselves in those shoes, you know?
You enjoy it?
I do. I think part of the part of why I do some projects outside of that is I like to look for a little bit more dynamic imagery. You can only push things so far when you're a school of business in terms of the artistry that goes into the work you do.
So you can't, like, for example, get a guy in a suit and tie who runs a company to sort of like undo his tie and start doing cartwheels. That doesn't work.
Right. I would love to. And I've brought stuff up like that, but I don't, you know, we gotta stay on brand. And and it's totally fine. We meet some great people, but I look to kind of get some more expression out on my own side gigs. So,
well, what are those side gigs?
Oh, man. For a long time, it was weddings and family portraits and stuff like that. And then it kind of evolved more into formal portraiture, almost a little bit more of an artistic or fine art direction. I found a little bit more fulfillment in that because I had some more creative direction over what I was doing with the image. You know, I think weddings and family portraits, people expect a certain outcome, you know, and I wanted to be able to direct the final project a little bit more.
So. Well, do you have an example of one of those projects where you got to be creative in a way that was fulfilling?
Yeah, I would say, actually, this again is not a plug, but I'm talking about one of the portraits that's coming up. So this coming weekend, I'm actually going to be working with a woman who's a refugee from Syria. And so I'm excited about that portrait because we're actually going to be working together to figure out like what's something that she's really passionate about. And she had said cooking is something that she really loves. So we're going to spend some time hanging out in her kitchen. Take some pictures there while she cooks something up. I've actually had her cooking before. It's very good. So
good.
There's a selfish part of me that's excited about this. And we're going to kind of take the portrait there, but I'm going to bring in some lights and stuff like that. I'm going to shape it so that we can really try to pull out her dynamic personality and her unique story. So that's portraits like that are what I really like to do. Yeah.
You know, I thought of this question for the end, but it seems like it fits right now.
Sure.
I looked at some of your work on your website, and one of the things that immediately struck me is how dynamic they are. There's movement in every picture I looked at, and I'm thinking of one in particular where there's a young man. I happen to know him, right? He's only about 12 years old, 13. You took his photo, and he's really sitting still. But you manage in some way in that photograph still to create an image that feels like there's movement, and the other one's more in a way that's more pronounced even. Is there some sort of an approach or philosophy you have?
Yeah, I think the first thing is always you have to make your subjects feel comfortable, which is, I mean, as anybody in the creative field, as you know, even from this kind of doing a podcast, making people feel comfortable will bring out their personality in a way that just sitting someone down to take a quick picture, you know, like when we used to do school pictures and they would give you a comb, which doesn't apply now because I'm bald. you know, you don't get that same kind of dynamic interaction. So getting people to laugh, getting them to kind of lean forward in their chair towards the camera. And then a huge part of, I think, artistry in general, but especially the visual arts and photography and film is how you use light. And that's a huge thing. I've spent a bunch of my career trying to learn it, trying to learn how to emphasize people and change mood. And that's one of the things that I try to do a lot with the portraiture.
So. Well, you know, we have about 20 puppies coming in about 10 minutes so that you'll feel comfortable. So I hope that's good for you.
That's amazing.
Just for you, Nate. Just for you.
I feel so honored.
You do portraits mainly. How did it come to be that you prefer portraits?
Right. So obviously I've been in the visual arts sphere for a long time. So video and photo, and I've kind of dipped my toe into all kinds of different different ways of expressing that. But I feel that portraiture, it's a challenge because you're taking one image and you're supposed to show the entire personality of this one individual. And it may sound a little cheesy, but I feel that portraiture is the closest you can get to speaking with photography, because you're taking somebody and you're trying to frame them up and you're trying to communicate something without saying anything, you know, and you're trying to have them look a certain way. And you're even the setting that you choose says something, as you might know, because we might be doing a little bit of that coming up soon. I think that's why I've leaned towards portraiture. And I just find people very interesting. You know, some people love landscapes, some people love more abstract photography, and I find that people are very compelling. And I get to know new people every time I do it. So that's why I ended up doing portraiture.
As I'm listening, the word relational keeps coming to my mind, doing photography in this particular way is not just about photography, it's about relationships.
Yes. Yes, it is. I would say that anytime someone steps in front of your camera, it requires some vulnerability, right? They have to be willing to actually come up there and be photographed, first of all. And then trying to get a more dynamic portrait requires more trust and more vulnerability. And I think part of that, it starts even before your handshake, you know, and how you make eye contact. And you end up having conversations with people and you end up learning about amazing stories. And I remember I photographed a former CEO of Walmart and ended up hearing about this crazy story about he and his friend were flying. His friend was the pilot. They had to do a crash landing.
Oh, wow.
And
did they crash land in a parking lot of a Walmart?
You'd think the chances are pretty high. That did not happen. I don't know if they crashed in the water or field or something. Mm. And you're wondering where the story is going, and it comes to find out that they were checked up. Obviously, they crashed. So, you know, all the first responders come in. They're checking them. And his friend was basically days away from having a major blockage in his heart. And if they hadn't crashed, right, they would never have found. So these are just the stories that you end up finding out because you're sitting there trying to talk to people, get to know them. It's just a total built-in excuse for me to get to know like a huge variety of people.
Wait a minute.
I love that.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what I love about this.
Yeah.
I get to know people, photographers, professors, students.
Yeah.
All sorts of people. It is fun, isn't it?
It is totally fun.
Getting to know people.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, you mentioned things like vulnerability, the notion of relationships, and that's a great segue into the second part of our discussion, which is the linkage between your everyday life, like your professional life, and your faith life. Could you share with us a description of how you consider yourself to be a person of faith?
Sure. Is this where I lay down on the couch and...
No, this is faith, man.
No, that's good.
Not psychotherapy.
That's a fair point. Right. Faith journey. I told you in the lounge that this might be the more complicated of the answers.
All right.
Which is fine. So I am 31. Special disclaimer. That's not a dig at you at all, man. You look sad when I said that. You're like, I remember being 31.
I remember being 31.
I remember having hair, so that's okay. I would say for the first 28, 29 years of my life, I really held on tightly to one worldview and one perspective. I did grow up in a Christian household with, I would say, fairly conservative values, knowing what I know now. And then when I was on the cusp of turning 30, I had, some people might call it a crisis of faith. I don't call it a crisis. I think I just kind of more or less awakened within myself and was just starting to ask questions.
Mm.
And I remember, can I share one of the questions?
Please.
Is that okay? So one of the questions that popped in my mind, I don't know why it came into my head, but it was the question of, if I grew up somewhere else or some other time, would I believe what I believe? Would I be as convinced and what I believe to be ultimate absolute truth as I am of what I believed at that point. And that started to just kind of like rock everything around. And I kind of made a commitment early on to go through that journey to figure out I wanted to chase down truth as much as I could. And I kind of had to commit to whatever that was, you know, and being willing, like, that could, I could come full circle right back to where I am, believing what I believe, or I could end up in a completely different state of mind, a completely different worldview. And I just had to be willing to actually go through that journey and end up wherever I ended up.
Right.
So, I guess that's kind of my faith journey in a nutshell. So,
well, are you comfortable telling us where you've ended up so far?
I can certainly do that because I haven't technically ended anywhere, which is like that annoying postmodern answer. You know, it's like, oh, we don't know anything. You know what I mean? It's not actually.
I'm not annoyed.
Okay.
I like
all right.
It.
Good. Good. So, I wouldn't say I've ended anywhere. I would say that I am much more convinced about less, if that kind of makes sense.
Makes
so I feel that I know less overall. Like, I've kind of gone through and I've done the footwork. Anybody who knows me knows I've read the books, I've done comparative religions, I've spent a lot of time writing, thinking, praying about all of this. And I've come down to, I'm like, there's not that much I'm 100% convinced on. You know, maybe some things are 98%, 99%. Maybe some things are 40%. But what I am convinced about is that God, however we conceptualize that, cares immensely and deeply about people, loves people, and that if there's any mandate on us as citizens of this world, it's to love and care for the people around us. And that was kind of like, all right, if I could really narrow this down to the thing that I'm most convinced on, that's it.
That's funny. Every year in churches like the Episcopal Church, so I know the Catholic Church, for example, will do this as well. There's a day on the calendar called Maundy Thursday, M-A-U-N-D-Y Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I can get into all that, but everyone would fall asleep. But the word basically comes from the Latin word mandate, mandatum, right? And the mandate happens in the Gospel of John, where it says, I am serving you. This is like the foot washing episode in the Gospel of John. I'm showing you an example of servanthood because you now have to go and serve everybody else. Mm. I mean, you use the word mandate, and I understand that there is a mandate, certainly in the Christian faith practice, to love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
And I think that's a different way of phrasing exactly what you said. It's interesting to me that you went, you are on a kind of journey, and where you've landed so far is what I would call the bullseye of the Christian faith, so that you kind of went around it and in my estimation came right back to the center of it. So
yeah, it's been a long journey, and I think that I look back and so much of those first 20 some odd years, it was like people weren't people, they were projects. You know, it was all about trying to get people onto your lifeboat. It was all about trying to get into your escape pod so that, you know, you could go to the really nice hotel once everything's done, you know, with the water slides and the gold.
Is that heaven to you? Mine is panda bears and puppies.
It's not, man. It's not. I'm sure I saw some weird like piece of art when I was a kid. And but like that was whether or not that's what I was taught, that's what I came away with for so long.
Right.
And I was like, man, that's so messed up. You know, I got to a point where I'm like, that's just like a really backwards way of looking at people and of going through life. And I felt like I missed out on so much of the dynamic and complex nature of humanity because of that. And the past few years have just been way more eye-opening.
We made a couple of jokes about our age difference. And so as one who's only 31, you got plenty of time to make up for it. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Thank you.
I don't know if you're comfortable answering this question. It kind of comes up in a conversation like this, and
sure,
we didn't plan to ask it, so you do what you're comfortable with.
I have no bullet points for it. Okay.
Your parents.
Okay. Yeah.
And all of this. Mm-hmm. Your family, you know, if you've been on a kind of journey from the place where you described that you started.
Sure.
Many people have stories about how their faith kind of take twists and turns and how their family responds to that. How's it been for you with your family?
It's been great. I think I'm not at the same place that they are anymore. And from what I can tell, that's okay.
Oh.
You know, we still have discussions and debates about that, you know, but I think that there's this realization, 'cause I guess you have to understand a little bit about where they came from. So both of my parents had kind of tough childhoods, and my dad grew up, I think he was, the influence was Seventh-day Adventist or something like that. And he kind of found his way out of that by studying, thinking, whatever you do to kind of shift your worldview. And so I kind of joke, there's a little bit of irony to him kind of, you know, evolving his way out of that. And then I'm like, hey, you know what? You taught me by example.
That's that Cats in the Cradle
song,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So you taught me kind of like how to think and be critical. And again, I haven't abandoned everything I've thought, but a lot of it has kind of shifted and changed. And so I like to riff on that a little bit sometimes.
So when things get crazy at Thanksgiving, you just say, hey, Dad, I'm just like you, man.
He does. He jokes about that. He's like, you're so much like me. I'm like, yeah.
Well, that's a big deal that he could be lighthearted about that and kind of appreciate who you are for who you are and make that connection.
I think he sees the work that's gone into it. I've done a lot of blogging and writing and thinking.
What's your blog? We can check out your blog.
Yeah, sure. It's on NathanOldham.com. It's all just my name. And I've got all my work on there, writing and photography and video and everything.
All right.
But I've done just kind of a lot of thinking out loud about my process. And so, you know, it's not one of those things where I just like got angry and walked away, or, you know, it's been a very thoughtful process.
Are you a churchgoer these days, or has your thought process and journey kind of kept you away from really being sort of part of a practicing community?
Are you recruiting me?
No, it happens all the time.
No, that's a great question. Yeah, so my family and I, we do go to a church in Willington. And we've actually been part of that community pretty much since it was started, about like 12, 13 years ago, something like that. So I have distanced myself somewhat from the formal religion of Christianity, at least I shouldn't say from the religion, maybe from the institution, and all that comes along with that, especially I think a lot of people know where that kind of goes, you know, tied in with politics.
I've never heard of it.
No. Well, let me enlighten you. But we continue to go to this church because we love the people there. I really like the pastor. I like everything that they stand for and talk about. But the institution is something that I've definitely stepped away from. And I've given myself the freedom to kind of be like, you know, it comes back to that journey of pursuing truth more than trying to reaffirm what I already believe, you know? So the church for us is really about that community, and that's why we keep going.
Do you find it to be a community where they're open to the idea of people wanting to, like, in your words, pursue truth, or are they more interested in just be this kind of Christian and that's what we're doing?
So I've definitely been at churches like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think we would be at this church if it was that of church, honestly.
I might leave mine and go to yours. I don't know.
See, I'm recruiting you. That's what this is all about. No. It's definitely a church where you are able to come and struggle with doubt openly, which I think is fantastic. And I know the pastor himself does a lot of talks that kind of weave through the nuance of a lot of different arguments. He doesn't come out a lot and say, here's what you should believe.
Oh, that's good.
Which is fantastic. So,
well, that is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we were talking about what you do for a living, photography. You were good mm-hmm. enough to open up about your faith journey. How do you think your life as a, well, can I say Christian, person of faith?
Yeah.
Led you to photography, and how do you think it influences your photography these days?
So I have my little bullet points here, and I was kind of joking about how for a little while, it was, the sad answer was that the way faith influenced my career as a photographer was that it was actually more based on survival for a while, because it was how I put food on the table. And so rather than this like super cool dynamic artsy answer, it was like I kind of prayed that I would get gigs so that I could, you know, buy chicken to feed my family. You know, like that was
Chick-fil-A, right?
Yeah,
it's gotta be Chick-fil-A. No, I can't say that on the radio. Go ahead.
No, so that was kind of the sad answer for a little while. And I would say, again, kind of with that turn, coming into my 30s, it shifted
That you're an old man, right?
Now that I'm an old man, now that my hair's gone, I know all things. I am all knowing. So it shifted a little bit when I turned 30, and I'm looking more for content now. So like what I am actually trying to put in front of my camera is something that I'm being way more intentional about. And that's kind of where that plug came in for the new photo project that I'm doing. Is I'm trying to help break down some of the divides that exist within our communities. I feel like we're told a lot who we should like love and hate based on which news outlet we're watching, and you know what I mean? And I'm like, man, like we need to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like we can't decide who we're going to hate before we know people. That's just craziness, you know? So I'm trying to show people what our community looks like, you know, taking dynamic portraits of people who you may otherwise walk by and not know, and give people the chance to kind of interact with that and wrestle with it.
I'm so glad you said that. I think that is where a lot of what I've been looking at these days has landed, which I'm happy about, where it's, can we start once again to have dialogue? Can we start once again to meet human beings instead of talking past one another and just labeling people either by political party or whatever the case may be? And you bring up something I think very important for all faith practices to do. And I think it's our responsibility to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm very impressed that you're making that part of your philosophy and how you do your work. And you think that that's informed by your faith journey?
It has to be. Yeah. I mean, obviously one of the things you hear about consistently in the Christian church and in the Christian faith is love your neighbor, right? You know, you hear about the two greatest commandments, love your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. And then you hear the parable of the Good Samaritan and all this. And then, you know, some wise guy is like, well, who is my neighbor? Exactly. You know, and it's kind of this big net theology. You know, it's not just this narrow group. It's not even people who are necessarily geographically super close to you. It's like your neighbor are the people who need you. You know, these are the people. And so it's absolutely informed by my faith.
I like that you put that that way. Your neighbors are the people who need you.
Yeah.
One of the things that occurs to me is you're going to meet a woman who's Syrian.
Mm-hmm.
We'll assume she's Muslim. Have you talked to her about this?
I'm not sure. I mean,
okay.
Assume.
Well, you're American and she's Syrian. Right. And that's something,
there
right?
There you go. That is
so
something.
So in some way, just like that story of the Good Samaritan, you guys are different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things I love about that parable is it says, you could be different, but you're still supposed to be loved.
Mm.
And I'm glad you brought that one up.
Yeah. I would say the only thing that I would clarify on my end is that one of the things that always really bothered me, actually, about the Christian institution was this, like, white guy goes to save the world theology, you know, of people like, I'm going across the ocean to save all the people that need me. And I think, like, sometimes that comes across weird. So when I'm going to meet this woman.
Yeah, sometimes.
You know what I mean? When I'm going to meet these people from all kinds of different backgrounds and stories, it's just as much about me needing them as them needing me. You know, we need each other as people. We need to know each other. We need to know each other's stories. And so one thing I want to make absolutely clear when I'm doing this project is to make sure that this is because I need to know people, you know, and like I'm as much of a person who has kind of abused just ideas of who people should be without actually knowing people. And I don't want to be that kind of person. You know,
I'm glad you're making this a project that will be made public in some way, because instead of saying I think we should do exactly what you were just discussing.
Yeah.
You know, we have about, if you could in 30 seconds, what would you want to leave us with as a person who practices a particular kind of art form, who's in the world of media, and who considers yourself to be a Christian on a journey? What would you leave us with?
I would say that I kind of had a tagline I used a little while ago when I was doing some portrait work, and it was, this is the world we've been handed, but it's not the world we have to leave behind. It was just kind of a phrase that popped into my head. And I think that whatever your work is, whatever your philosophy is, your worldview is, we should all be working to make the world better. And I do mean working. Like, we should be using our individual voices and talents to make this world what we want it to be, rather than trying to fit into what it is.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Everybody, my guest today, Nathan Oldham, thank you for being on. Thanks, Nate. And everybody at UConn, we're at WHUS 91.7 Stores. My name is the Reverend Brian Blair. I'm at St. Mark's Episcopal Chapel on North Eagleville Road here at UConn.